Hello and welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and I provide online coaching in peak performance, health, and injury resolution, as well as being the coach of our online training community, the Training Tribe. That's T2. And I am here today, it's my great honor and privilege, to be with my co-host, PK, to discuss episode number 162 of the podcast, which is seasonality in training. What do you say to that, PK?
I say, tell me more. Good morning, John.
Good morning to you. Well, I was recently doing a bit of a mojo mashup.
What the heck is that?
I was doing a mojo mashup with some of my tribe peeps. So a couple of members of the Training Tribe, some tribesters, were kind of doing a little bonus session. So they were rendezvousing with me from a basement gym in Portland, Oregon. And we had a discussion about how the annual training planner, the ATP that we use with T2, is designed. And I went into the development of my seasonality model. And so as we were cooling down from a jump series that we were doing, as well as just kind of looking at compression and expansion, low to high position management in the beast, things like that, we had a great discussion. And that's what I think you and I are going to chop up a bit today as well. And I felt it was valuable to share this on the podcast because this stuff is really cornerstone content at the Lifetime Athlete.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you and I have chopped it up in varying degrees over the years, but I think it's interesting that it came up kind of naturally at the end of a workout in that sort of afterglow where you've all shared the experience and really pertinent stuff comes up. So break it down for me. What did you share with them?
Well, in generalities, the seasonality model of, I want to say, lifestyle is really the concept of basing our lifestyle and our behaviors, which we're going to identify, on the seasons of the year. And that's just really responding to or aligning with the natural world. And I should say right away that it's slightly different from programming using an off-season, preseason, peak season, postseason model. That, you know, we do that with some athletes in some sports, but this model of seasonality is more looking at, you know, how does the human beast adapt, change, function best as we go through the year and we have changes in daylight hours and intensity of sunlight and sometimes temperature and things like that.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I think that distinguishing between the two, and we're really talking about the natural seasons here as opposed to the sports seasons.
Exactly. Kind of a calendar year focus, depending on where one lives in the world, of course. And what I did with the seasonality model, it just kind of occurred to me over time, is I applied the ancestral lens or I used an ancestral view with respect to certain things like training and eating and sleeping, because, you know, depending upon how you want to shake it out, we've got about 3 million years of evolution of these patterns. And so there are 5 specific parameters, which I've identified they've also been identified to some extent in the literature, but this model is a blending of the available science and then my observations and opinions. But these 5 things: the amount of sleep that one gets, the average intensity of training, the total volume of training, or actually all movement, you know, so movement includes training and general daily activity. So we'll say the total volume of that, daily caloric consumption, and roughly the grams of carbohydrate that are in one's daily diet at any time in the year. So that's where this seasonality model looks at 5 different components every month of the year.
Got it. I like it. I like it, tracking.
So here's the statement that I'm sure someone else has said it, but it appealed to me with respect to this model, and it's this: light drives hormones.
Yes. Yeah. And we're talking like light as in the light outside, sunshine creates light, etc., right?
Pretty much as the most powerful thing, although because we're designed to follow that outdoor light, the sun, but if we get a little too manipulative with our environment as modern humans and we use a lot of artificial lighting indoors, that can be a factor. But yeah, the sun is sun is king. Okay, so there's another one. Sun is king. Light transforms. But this circadian biology, or response to how the light changes through the year, it's hardwired into our beasts, our organisms.
Well, how does that, what do you mean by hardwired physiologically?
I know what I mean. I just don't know exactly how I want to say it. But I guess if we look at, again, let's just say it's 3 million years of evolution, the human evolved to survive and thrive. And so we found ways to optimize our function. Otherwise, as a species, we would have gone extinct. And this hardwiring became very solid in that, well, when we have a winter pattern, certain hormone levels will either go up or go down, or the way that we use those hormones and neurotransmitters will become more or less efficient. And over time, this kind of locked into our pattern. And then you can say, well, that changed slightly 10 to 12,000 years ago with the advent of agriculture. But even then, we were still fairly locked into the circadian patterns until literally just the last couple of hundred years when we've really changed things up.
Right. And hormones, I guess the importance of hormones in the body is that they are, the main signalers or initiators or drivers of like how the body works.
Yeah, precisely. So all of our cellular functions, our metabolisms, they are dependent upon these hormones as signaling molecules to, basically turn on, turn off all of our functions, including things, like our respiration rate, our heart rate, some of the things that are subconscious that we don't think about. And I like to start off with a question. I sort of say it rhetorically to myself and everyone else. We live in this modern world and we can manipulate our environment. And a lot of times we can cognitively override nature, but should we?
Well, that's a fantastic question, especially for those of us in sort of northern places where this time of year, the sun goes down early, right? And it's, 4:40 or something like that. And it's dark by 5 and you're still, your day is not close to being over because of, maybe or maybe not it is. So that's a question that I think that we do ask ourselves. How can we chop this up? How can we sort of dig deeper? Should we be overriding in times like this?
Well, I think that the answer is not a simple one, but certainly as modern humans, we have conveniences that are great to take advantage of. However, we probably want to be aware of this powerful factor and maybe not deviate from it too far. I mean, like you said, some of these changes are more pronounced with latitude, and we're probably under 9 hours of decent daylight right now. Sometimes we call this the time of icy darkness here in Montana. But, a point to be made is that these changes also exist at the equator. They're just more subtle.
Yes.
Humans as animals, a part of the natural world, should probably respond and function as the seasons change, just like every other animal and plant does.
Oh, absolutely. I was just a couple of days ago, I was talking with a friend. She lives in Los Angeles, and she was complaining, lovingly complaining about how cold it was. And I was like, how cold is it? 57? She's like, actually, yeah. I was like, okay, I mean, if you're used to things being in the 80s and 90s and then it dips down, you know, 30 or 40 degrees, something like maybe relatively temperate for here in Montana in the summer can feel cold. So I think it is all relative as well, depending on where you're at in relation to the equator.
Yes, and precisely. And this pattern, it exists. You know, temperature is certainly a factor. Light is probably the more powerful one in that. You know, because I've had some discussions with folks about, like, well, you know, I live in the desert. It's hot. It seems like we're flip-flopped where winter's a time of more activity and summer might be the downtime. However, that's not really what the physiology shows. You know, it's actually that light that sets up the hormonal opportunities. And so we actually have populated the deserts more so than they once were, and we've kind of created this, but it's not necessarily a totally natural rhythm.
Well, that's a great observation. I hadn't considered that. That does make sense, though, hearing you describe that we've gone to places that are inhabitable, and then because it's too hot to be outside in the summer, yeah, like sort of resting in the AC, that is not listening to nature, right?
Indeed. And, you know, that's a pretty good rabbit hole, you know, in that health world. But if I was to say, well, I would like to hit on each of those 5 points. So if I review them quickly, that's sleep, intensity, volume, calories, and carbs. And just for the listeners' ease of understanding, I attached to the podcast, if you look at it on the website, that is, this graphic that I've been working on. It's probably still a work in progress, but it shows the 5 lines and it has 12 months and, you know, kind of allows you to get a visual understanding of this. Also, there is an article on the blog at thelifetimeathlete.com if you'd like to read about that model a bit more.
Tasty. Well, let's get into the first one. How does the circadian rhythm's change of season affect sleep?
So the balance of cortisol and melatonin are affected by the length of day and the intensity of sunlight.
I'm sorry, John, I was taking a sip of water. Absolutely, I'm tracking it.
Yeah, and we've definitely talked about that, you know, at great length. So just to give that some explanation, you know, we have a morning spike in cortisol to wake us up and get us going in the day, and then in the evening, ideally, you know, our melatonin comes up and helps us to get sleepy, creates that sleep drive. Well, in the summer, we typically find it a little easier inside our biology to produce that cortisol to get going and go for a long day. Conversely, in the winter, you know, we really are set up to get an earlier, bigger dose of melatonin come evening.
Right. So maybe even just like common sense, the natural inclination to, you know, to be sleepier when the sun's down, that happens more in the winter, is actually, we're getting signals to our hormones from the season.
Yeah. And my whole point is, let's just be sensitive to those and maybe not deny them. And research does support, you know, that humans have a stronger sleep drive, you know, urge to sleep, and then ultimately sleep on average as much as one sleep cycle, you know, 75 to 90 minutes longer in the winter than in the summer.
And so, Mike, I guess the question is, there's a way to lean into that and say, okay, I'm going to take advantage. What do you think happens when you sort of go against that? Or maybe because of how your life is structured, winter's your busy season, so you're actually going against your biology and sleeping less, what would be the, I guess, ramifications of not listening to that? Or what could they be? I know it's a deep, that's another rabbit hole.
Yeah. No, anytime you force biology, it creates a stressor, you know? So if it's the time when we need more sleep and you're pushing that away, eventually that's going to cause some erosion and some abrasion and wearing down of the beast. And, you know, on a hormonal level, basically what's happening then is your body's probably artificially producing more cortisol and not enough melatonin. And cortisol's, you know, being one of the major stress hormones, you know, that's going to potentially lead to more inflammation and more deleterious changes in metabolic function.
Interesting. Okay.
So everything comes at a price. You know, there's no free ride in biology. You know, there's always a repercussion or a cost or a side effect. So this whole semi-hibernation pattern that we have as humans, it's actually common across many animals, particularly mammals. You know, we're not bears, we don't fully hibernate, but nonetheless, we really are programmed to seek and get a bit more sleep at this time of year.
Yeah, listen to the science. Okay. So that makes sense. And I think that let's talk about your next key point, which was, I believe, intensity. How does this affect intensity, or how do you think about it through this lens?
Oh, yes. Right off the bat, I need to say high intensity exercise, high intensity training, however you want to phrase it, is good and necessary practically all year long. So I, unless I've got somebody on a big recovery phase with a lot of downtime, I'm always programming in some high intensity. But here's the kicker. The amount that you do overall average intensity in December should be less than it is in July, potentially.
Gotcha. How much less, do you think?
Well, again, that's going to depend on the individual, the organism.
Okay.
What's their goal? And even where do they live? You know, so if you've got a young, healthy, highly fit athlete living at the equator, we may have a very subtle change. But let's say you've got a middle-aged fitness enthusiast living in Southwest Montana. I have a big difference in the average intensity that I do in July versus in December. And it's, I can feel it. You know, I want to do it in July and I can absorb it, tolerate it. I don't really crave much of it in December. And if I try to do it, it usually breaks me down.
Interesting. Okay. So what are some of the ramifications of that? Or what are we keeping in mind if we're tuning into what our body's telling us?
Yeah, I think you just look at, you know, maybe that line on the graph, but, you know, consequently, your average intensity just trends downward as you get to the solstice, and then it can potentially go back upwards towards probably midsummer. And this may be related to the ability to use and degrade adrenaline and dopamine, you know, because those things are affected by the circadian clocks, you know. So in other words, you know, when you're out, when you're getting a lot of that sunlight exposure, there's multiple things happening. Of course, we can talk about vitamin D, you name it, but also we're getting kind of an upregulation in how the body uses some hormones and neurotransmitters, with adrenaline and dopamine being among them. Whereas during the time of icy darkness right now, there's just not as much stimulus for that to go on, because the whole beast is programmed to kind of, you know, hold back a little.
Yeah, I think that, again, what I really like, this all just makes sense to hear you lay it out there. And, you know, it is, I guess, listening to what the durable beast wants based on what's happening outside. So the next thing on the list was volume. What are we thinking about in terms of volume?
Yeah. And so again, I'll sort of like refer to or talk about the graphic. You don't necessarily have to look at it, but you generally see the total volume, and I'm going to call it training because that's what we're dealing with lifetime athletes, but you know, all movement. It will generally peak late summer or early fall. And on that graph, I, you know, just to make a good graphic, I use fairly definitive months, you know, to say, here's the peak month, but it'll certainly vary slightly, again, per individual and location, though not by much.
Right, right.
And this actually coincides with hunter-gatherer patterns. You know, if you think about when the volume of activity peaked, you know, when we talk about GDA or general daily activity, that was the big territory of the hunter-gatherer. Well, attaining food and possibly creating temporary shelters, migrations, you know, all that stuff tends to happen late summer, early fall in a natural environment. And that would also be, you know, why as athletes, we probably, if we can, we probably want to have our highest volume then as opposed to other times in the year.
Yeah. And so that absolutely makes sense. What if you are a person who is a sort of their sport or their competition is a winter sport, and you know, they're not only training, but it's performance and potentially, you know, what would you say to a person whose chosen pursuit just happens to run in contrast to biology? Not what would you program for them, but what sort of like mentality would you adopt, or just thing to be aware of? What would be the most important thing to be aware of?
Love it. And you know, whether you're talking about skiing or hockey or basketball, you know, those
right.
are
yeah, exactly.
They're winter seasons. And you know, these are things we created, you know. That's okay. That's good. But the nice thing about, I always say this, you know, the human is a durable beast and there is no perfect. And so because all these things ride together that, you know, that we're talking about today, well, if you're, let's say, a little bit less optimal, you know, in that area where now your peak season is happening at Christmas, well, you can place a greater emphasis on the others to act as offsetters. So there might be some things to do with extra sleep beyond what we just talked about, and nutrition, and then training and competition, modifying those to the extent that is possible in any given program. And so, yeah, it's not necessarily a death sentence. However, I am going to say that it's probably not ideal to, you know, look at winter sports as the optimal based on a circadian model. And I don't know that there's data to say, well, let's look at the, you know, because it's so sport specific, but let's look at the number of injuries in downhill skiing, for example. You know, injuries in and of themselves, they can be caused, it's multifactorial, but when we know a lot about basketball, and we'll talk about, you know, different levels of it, but at professional level, you know, the regular season is 82 games, and almost today, almost every team has multiple professionals just helping them to work with, okay, let's track and let's get better sleep. Let's manage that nutrition. Let's look at recovery processes. Let's modify training so that we can get these guys through the season. And most of them will tell you, man, it's just a beat down with all the travel and whatnot. And that's not a model of health and longevity. And so a lot of these athletes, you know, manage to, you know, survive their careers, but they don't continue that lifestyle beyond that. In fact, the ones that have the longest careers are the ones that find the ways to, you know, kind of, you know, create that balance in the offsetters as much as possible.
Right, right. Well, that makes total sense. And I think that when you were just, I was thinking about Kareem, right, where he played forever, he scored the most points, and you know, he was famously doing ballet and yoga in the 80s, you know, and I think that so ahead of the curve in terms of rest, recuperation, probably diet as well. Interesting. I think that that's a good tip. That's a nugget right there.
Yeah, and a shout out to Kareem, because for a while there, you know how like a lot of famous people, they have their fitness product that they endorse. And, you know, Suzanne Somers had the Thighmaster, Tony Little had the Gazelle, but Kareem had this like friggin' heavy jump rope. And it was like a weighted jump rope. And, you know, I don't know how much he actually used it in training, but certainly the marketing information suggested that, I don't have mine anymore. I got one of those, and this has been decades ago, man. But that was a beat down workout. I mean, you try to, the rope is heavy. It's a lot of work. And he was onto something. So yeah, what an innovator.
Interesting. I'm going to have to look that up. I'm sure that, you know, it's the Christmas season, John. Maybe I'll be able to find one of those for you off eBay, but interesting. So any other thoughts on volume before we move on to point number four?
Well, just the main thing is that ideally, you know, volume's not going to stay consistent through the year. And also ideally the maximum is probably going to be late summer, early fall. And then another idea you just made me come up with is, what if I took, if I had an old barn, and then I just stocked it with fitness museum pieces. So it had those jump ropes and the thigh masters and all these other things in it.
I love it. All right, John Boy, let's move on to the fourth item on your list, which is calories. What are we thinking about here?
Oh, yeah. So this is taking me back to the 80s, man, because last week I was, I don't think my appetite had downregulated per the season yet. You know, I was a little late getting there. And so I was hungry. And in fact, I was hungry like the wolf, taking it back to Duran.
Yeah, didn't last week you had the breakfast steak right before we went on or something like that?
I did. And it's funny because those cravings have subsided. And I think maybe because the icy darkness is telling me, maybe you don't have to eat quite as much food. So speaking more specifically about calories, generally our intake of calories historically would have followed food availability and abundance. And so, we would always eat what we could get. And when there was a lot of it, you know, obviously that's how we would consume things. And so in this modern world, we don't quite have the same circumstances, but the body is designed to seek and consume those calories, summer, fall as a pattern. Because we got used to over 3 million years not having as many calories available, winter, spring. So you'll notice that this mirrors to some extent both volume and intensity. And that's kind of nice that works that way, that when we're our most active, we have generally both the availability and perhaps the cravings for the most fuel. So we simply need less calories in winter and a little bit more in summer if we go along with the activity model. The hormones ghrelin and leptin, which are associated with changes in light as well, and they monitor our appetite and satiety, they do alter through the seasons with these light changes.
Yeah, and so I think that this can be one where listening to our genetics can be more difficult. At least personally, I find it, maybe winter, I'm kind of cozied up and I the sun's gone down and I'm doing a little snacking. I think that this is one that I find it hard to connect with. Any thoughts with that, to sort of listen to what your body, or how to get to a place where maybe it's easier to hear those signals, what your body's telling.
Yeah, I think that's just an example of being a modern human, and I've certainly felt that too. You know, we're conditioned to think of, Christmas time, this holiday time as, a time of feasting and gathering and all of that. And the only thing we probably did socially over the last several hundred years is we shifted the clock a bit, where that probably, that part of the holiday should have been in September as opposed to December. And so, I think we've just become conditioned to do that. And there's so many, addictions that affect us as modern humans. We get addicted to many things. And in my own case, I think that any person who's ever tasted a chip and the crunch and the mouthfeel and the experience, man, you don't forget that. I can tell you that, most of the time I eat, a healthy diet and, and I'm healthy and fit and all that kind of stuff. But man, let me tell you, the craving for the chip and the delicious experience of the chip has never changed one bit.
Well, I mean, and I think that we can look at the chip as a purely almost scientific creation, culinary creation, where the elements of it didn't happen on accident. It's actually been engineered to create that, the response that you just so eloquently described. So I think that, just the perils of being a modern human and then just sort of trying to listen to what our genetics are saying, even though there might be some white noise depending on the season, That's some good advice.
I like that white noise thought. That's brilliant on your part, because you are. So just kind of backing up, you know, we talked about sleep, and we talked about the average intensity of training, the total volume of training, and we kind of touched on calories, you know, just saying sure. More in summer, less in winter to some degree. Well, the last one is it's the great hot topic, you know, it's carbs. And so here's the first thing I would say is, even when you're at the equator, carbohydrate availability, like, you know, again, going back to ancestral times, it was relatively seasonal prior to agriculture. So, you know, the way nature works is, you know, it's not overly random, you know, there are still seasons, in the more temperate climates, and there's a season of kind of like ripening. And so, I think some people are, you know, maybe not as aware of that as others, but yeah, you know, obviously like where we live, you know, obviously right now, nothing is growing except ice. And then of course in the summer, it's a time of abundance.
Yeah. And I think that, so what you're saying there is when we're looking at the circadian rhythms and connecting that to carbs, we're talking about, I guess like here in Montana in the summertime, we're like binging on berries. In the wintertime, there's just nothing naturally available. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Yeah. And so when you look at, say, like fruits ripening, you know, that's sure. Kind of a summer fall kind of thing, you know, spring in some places, but you know, the warmer times of the year. And so those were the only carb sources, you know, for 3 million years. It's like, you know, you could get a berry, or, you know, maybe in some cases there might have been a root vegetable type thing. You know, we're not talking about availability of food like that we enjoy now, sometimes sure. To our demise. But so carbs were just from those kinds of plants, and they were only available at certain times of year. Interestingly enough, that coincided with, you know, kind of our peaks in intensity and volume. And so those things line up fairly well. You know, there's going to be some overlap and again, variance, but that would be my point. And it comes back again, light drives hormones. So if I come back to that point every time, I would say it has been shown that insulin sensitivity in the human is slightly higher in the summer than it is in the winter. So we're genetically programmed to be able to make use of carbohydrate metabolically.
Right. It totally makes sense, John.
Yeah. And again, these are just, there is data on every one of these topics. To my knowledge, no one's put them together quite this way, because I'm using some of my observations. So not totally just talking out of, you know, whatever. And yet I'm going to say, because carbs are such a hot topic, you know, they're argued and defended, and, you know, we've got the, oh, let's go low, high carb. And some people say never processed. And some people maybe like me, like be careful with always and never. Oh, maybe there might be a place here and there for even a processed carbohydrate. Do you want to be low carb? Do you want to be keto? Are you carnivore? Can you be an athlete doing that? Well, you know, I'd say there's at least a general consensus that the more volume and intensity a person does, the more likely they'll need some carbohydrate in their diet or benefit from it. Not saying that you can't be healthy and athletic eating only a carnivore diet, but at the most voluminous and explosive levels, carbs can be good. But so here's the athletic conundrum, though. Athletes get a partial buy because the athletic body is much better at glucose disposal than a gin popper. And so you know, exercise just makes you more insulin sensitive. And even during exercise, you have non-insulin dependent receptors where your muscle cells can take up glucose in the absence of insulin. So it's really an interesting physiologic thing. And a lot of arguments surround it, but here's where that conundrum comes in. It's a slippery slope, because if you're not, if you're overeating carbs to, you know, not be in line with your training levels, et cetera, it fairly rapidly starts to mess with the metabolism in an undesirable way.
Right. Yeah, and I think that I like how you broke that down right there. And that is interesting. The athlete's ability to, the athletic body's ability to handle sort of the insulin or the carbs differently. It can be, especially if your activity level is decreased, that could be kind of tricky if you don't change your nutrition to match how you've reduced or maybe modified in the winter months your training level.
Yes, and here's where the gray area is indeed gray, because we're actually, just like we're more insulin sensitive in the summertime, as a whole, we're a little less insulin sensitive in the winter. Our bodies are sort of geared to upregulate fat burning metabolism. And so if there's ever a time when you wanted to try some time restricted feeding or some fasting or a keto diet, winter's the time to do it, because most of the ancestral peoples used nutritional ketosis. That was what they did by default through the winter months, because, you know, they're eating a by default, a very low carb diet. So again, most places, there's a few exceptions out there, but not too many. And so I have to say it that way. It's like, well, if we've got that athletic person, if it's the basketball player and they don't have a choice, like, yeah, they're probably going to eat more carbohydrates during the winter. But for most everybody else, if you can let your body have some periods of nutritional ketosis and some autophagy and some of those reset things, which were sort of designed to do, again, back 3 million years, to repair the beast. So we repair it every night with sleep, but we also do it on a seasonal level. And so there's a real strong reason to no matter what level you're at with carb consumption, make it a lower level in the winter than it is in the summer.
I love that. That's dynamite, John. So we've gone through each of the 5 points in detail. Do you have any final considerations that you'd like to sort of tie this all together, this idea with?
Yeah, I'll just hit some quick points here. So first of all, this is a flexible model. You know, it has to be. And so these things can adjust based on where you live and what you're doing. And that means it's context dependent. And there won't be a total shift, but again, how each person puts the mixology together is how they do it. And maybe you need a good coach to help you to do that. You have to experiment to get your best results. And so I think that's always fun to do, but to be willing to do it and have an open mind. And then also recognize that there are those challenging situations, like we talked about, like say the peak season winter athlete. You know, that's a challenging situation where adjusting stressors to offset that stress load that's coming into the body. So there's a stress load of not, let's say, existing in a lifestyle that's genetically aligned, you know, if you're pushing it, but you can sort of magnify the things you can control, and that can help you. Also, tips for right now. So it's mid-December. If I was just to lay it out there, I would say, hey, sleep more. Train less in terms of doing shorter workouts. Make your workouts briefer. I sometimes call them the micro workout. Be sure to train when the sky is light, because a grinder at 5 a.m. or 8 p.m. under artificial lighting is evolutionarily a bit of a challenge. So I'd rather see a person do a short workout over lunch break if they can do that. And also, on an average level, lower your intensity. So you're still going to have some high intensity in your training and should, but just touch on it, you know, don't live there. And so those things together, I mean, I just reflected on this recently. That's one reason. There's multiple reasons. One reason why New Year's resolution programs, suffer fests, they suck and they always fail miserably, because it's forcing a person to try to do high volumes and intensity of training, oftentimes at night or early in the morning, when their body's not made to do it. And that's one of the reasons why, the whole Biggest Loser model causes breakdown.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And so last of those points, I would just say, or a couple of them, you know, eat a little less calories and experiment, you know, don't starve yourself and get into, you know, suffering, but just explore how all that works together. In fact, if you've got your life in balance and you're sleeping more and you're training appropriately, you're going to be in a more parasympathetic state. And what do we always say here? Fat burns in a flame of calmness. And so, you know, yeah, if you're hyped up all the time, that's a cortisol driven world. It, you know, it's a glucose dependent metabolism. It's inflammation dominant. And I just had a discussion with a client about her brother, you know, the other day on that topic. And lastly, or maybe not lastly, but also on that carb thing, just, you know, now's the time to go keto if you're so inclined. I'm not saying that's for everyone, but I think for most people, a short stint of it could be beneficial. And now finally, all this stuff works when you just align it. Align the items, align them with the light, align the biology, the hormones. And here's what happens. You actually achieve higher peaks and you have better health. And I've seen this a ton. You know, the people that create programs or get into ones that don't do this, they don't make it as far. And sometimes they have catastrophic endings. Whereas the people that observe this, even loosely, they just, they're the winners.
I love it. I love it. You just came out, finished strong with nuggets of wisdom. Pearls.
Yeah. And there's just so much passion. Thank you for allowing me to do that, PK. And, if you are still listening, thank you. I appreciate you. And, you know, your presence means the world to me. And if this message resonates with you, I might ask a few favors, you know, to share this with someone that you care about who can benefit. And if you have not already done so, leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show. Now, if you'd like to dive deep into this topic or other areas, you know, of maximum health and peak performance, coaching is available. And if you want to train like a true natural human beast using these models, T2 could be for you. Everything can be found at thelifetimeathlete.com. So if you're interested, check it out. And again, thank you so much and have an oh so fabulous day.
Adios, everyone.